This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Welcome to the Friday, April 14th, 2017 edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got 59 degrees right now at O'Hare, and the AccuWeather forecast says we'll get near 70 today, mainly in the 50s at the lakefront. And tomorrow, we could see a high temperature of 80 degrees with windy and warmer conditions.
Well, the markets are closed today in observance of Good Friday, but we have a very action-packed noon business hour. Let's run down some of the things we will be talking about coming up on the program. Coming up at 12:09, we'll talk to a favorite guest of ours, Howard Davidowitz, the chairman and chief executive officer of Davidowitz & Associates in New York. He's going to talk about the retail sector meltdown and the fact that Easter is one of the bigger shopping days of the year. And then the fracking boom could hit Alaska soon. What does that mean for your next trip to the gas station? We'll talk to Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com about the impact on fracking, Alaska, and the price of gas in America.
And on a day like this, when we don't have regular business reports, we take the time that we do have to talk about the latest trends and discuss the markets and the economy in a little more detail than we get to most of the time. It is Entrepreneur Friday, and we're going to be talking with an entrepreneur who's still in the process of rolling out his product. You know, how do you get through that? And we also are going to take a look at the a new club, a rooftop club, which Chicago loves its rooftops, so we're going to be talking about that summer trend.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, the retailers who are involved in the Easter selling season, are hoping for a strong finish to the season. We're joined by Howard Davidowitz, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Davidowitz & Associates in New York. Howard, good to have you back on the program.
Thanks for the invitation.
There is Easter retail and there is retail in general. So let's talk about both of these. First, how's the holiday sales
look? Well, retail in general are a catastrophe. Payless filing bankruptcy, closing 1,000 stores. Radio Shack, again, 500 stores. The Limited bankrupt. Wet Seal bankrupt. You know, BC, BG, Max's area. H.H. Gregg bankrupt. We have a record number, Gander Mountain, a record number of closed stores, record number of bankruptcies, record number of vacancies. It's really tough. The department store sector is the worst. It's really bad in the retail business. They're all closing stores, and it ain't good.
Wait, are we looking at a transformation whereby we will continue to have retail business, but it's not going to be at the mall?
That's a very key point. In other words, it's not that we're not doing business. It's just that there are two gigantic factors. We are tremendously overstored. We have five times as much space per shopper as England, France, Japan, and Canada. We have insanely too many stores. That's point one. And point two, the fastest growing area by far is online sales. So we're doing more and more business online, including the brick and mortar stores. The brick and mortar stores are 8 out of the 10 top online retailers. So they're eating their own lunch, doing online business, and they've got all the overhead in the stores, and it just doesn't work. So there are tremendous changes in the retail business, and it's resulting in a catastrophe in closed stores and all of the rest. And it's just very bad out there. As far as Easter goes, there has been a little pickup in the last couple of weeks that I've seen in apparel for the first time in a long time. I think it relates to brighter colors and Easter shopping. So there is a little pickup in the last couple of weeks, even in some department stores. So that may be a little bit of a help, but it's just overall been absolutely terrible. Gymboree going broke. I mean, it's just terrible.
My teenage years are pretty far in the rearview mirror, but way back when, going to the mall just to hang out was an activity. And now studies say that people are using their discretionary income not to go shopping just to have something to do. They're using it to go out to dinner instead.
I think that's a small part of it. What I really believe is there are now more millennials than baby boomers, and they're different. They're just different. Number one, they don't have cars. They don't like to drive. They don't like to go to malls. They're urban people. And they shop online and they shop urban. They don't like suburban. We spent 70 years building up retailing suburban, and you're right. In early years, the mall was the center of all the activity for the teens and all the rest. Well, all the teen chains are going bust. They're in the malls. They're all getting killed. So there's a tremendous change as now we have more millennials than baby boomers. They're very different. You're right on entertainment, but they're into technology. The most important thing they have is their iPad, their iPod, their sneakers. So they've got a different mindset. They're kind of a little sloppy. Maybe the greatest new trend is not so important to them. So they're different, and that's affecting shopping. But the biggest factor is overstoring, overmall, overbuilt, and at the same time, congruent with that, is the huge double-digit growth in online, which is continuing, and there's no way for these number of stores to survive.
I remember in past discussions, Howard, over the last few years, you declared the economy was a disaster. At this point, even though we're seeing this transformation, we're seeing stores closed, do you think that this is a tell about the economy?
I don't think it says anything about the whole economy, and here's why. When you add in online sales, it's not that bad. See, that... if you just look at the sales store for store, I mean, you see the closings, you see the bankruptcies. But if you put all the sales together, it's not that, it's bad, but it's not that terrible. So is our economy in collapse? I don't think so. I think we're living in a 2% economy, which is not much growth. But that, you know, we've been in a 1.7 economy last year. Maybe this year will be a 2% economy in growth. So we've got slow growth. Tremendous growth in debt, and we're going to have to pay a price for all of the overbuilding. Now, the best area is home. Home is tremendous. It's driving this economy. That's why furniture business is so good. That's why Home Depot is so good. That's why Lowe's is so good. As far as for most people working less, having problems meeting their bills, that's why TJ Maxx and folks like that, undersellers are doing so well. That's why Dollar General is opening 1,000 stores. That's why Aldi is doing so good. The cheapest guys, the guys that undersell Walmart and Target are doing great because people just have less money and they're more careful about how they shop. So there's a lot of changes taking place out there, and a lot of the very rich companies, look at Neiman Marcus, my God, they're in a crisis. Lord & Taylor, terrible. Macy's, terrible. What's going on? Well, a lot of these private equity deals where they loaded the company up with debt, they're almost all collapsing. The private equity deals have destroyed retail. And they are behind most of these bankruptcies, like the Limited and all Payless. You load a company up with debt, and then you hope for the best. Well, the best didn't come, the worst came. So they're all closing stores, and they're sitting there with this debt, and there's no way out except bankruptcy. So it's a really, really bad situation.
Well, Howard, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. We'll talk to you soon. Howard Davidowitz, Chairman, Chief Executive Officer at Davidowitz & Associates in New York.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The cost of gas has been on the rise amid developments in oil overseas and here at home. We welcome in Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst, GasBuddy.com, based in Chicago. And you hear him throughout the week analyzing gas prices right here on WBBM. Patrick, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about this rise in gas prices. Is this simply a reflection of the tension in the Middle East, putting some just roiling the oil futures markets, or is this simply a case of spring is here and everyone has road trips on the mind?
Well, Rob, there's a lot going on, as there always is. Recently, of course, with the serious situation that developed last week, oil prices did see an initial reaction. They jumped about 2% in after-hours trading, which is fairly active. But during Friday's trading session a week ago, they really backed off. And so Syria, not really an impact, though. It's certainly something to keep our eyes on. In the backdrop, though, rising oil prices certainly have been a big contributor to higher gas prices. A barrel of West Texas Intermediate now $6 a barrel more than where it was just 3 weeks ago. And we can thank weaker than expected crude oil inventory numbers coming out from the EIA for the jump in crude oil prices. We also have that switch over to summer gasoline taking hold, though refineries have been doing a fairly good job being able to finish their maintenance. So I would say really the biggest factor is the jump in crude oil price, isn't that switch over to more costly summer blend gasoline.
The latest development out of Alaska is that oil companies have discovered about 5 billion barrels of recoverable oil in Alaska's North Slope. How long does it take to begin extracting that? And once it starts coming out of the ground, what would be the impact on the price of gas?
Well, certainly it would take years. There have been a lot of developments. Of course, Trump's administration has looked at allowing more drilling offshore around Alaska and the Beaufort Sea, but that would take years for that oil to be brought online. Of course, Alaska has been dealing with declining production already, and when it does, that would be, I would say, 5 years away. The impact to gas prices, certainly hard to say right now. Obviously, more drilling, more oil production in the United States would be beneficial in bringing the cost of gasoline down, but with everything on the global scale right now, geopolitical tensions, it's difficult to tell if that would result in a net drop in gasoline prices or if there will be something else going on. But certainly the U.S. increasing production here at home would be good news.
Wouldn't there be a political war over this?
There certainly could be. Of course, it was Obama who really tied down a lot of the ability for new offshore oil production to come online. He made a move in a rare 1953 law in which Trump may have a difficult time undoing at least some of those protected areas in the Arctic. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But there are some areas where Trump probably could open up to more oil companies drilling offshore. And again, even if he did, it would likely take multiple years. He'd probably be out of office. Or possibly be out of office in 5 to 8 years before that oil even really hits the market.
Now, I guess the question for the oil companies, would they really want to? Would they want to depress the price of oil even more?
Yeah, and that's probably what they're looking at right now. It's really just too risky to launch such an expensive venture, especially in Arctic waters. Tremendous cost to bring this oil to the surface, and at $50, $54 a barrel, and with OPEC having recently cut back and having capacity to ramp up production, you could inevitably see a move from OPEC to raise production to mitigate U.S. oil companies investing in places like that. So there's a whole lot of plays that could happen here. It's not very cost effective to produce that Arctic oil at, you know, $50 to $54 a barrel. You'd likely need to see prices go to $60 to $70 to see more interest in offshore drilling.
Patrick, thanks for joining us. Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
The markets are closed in observance of Good Friday.
Entrepreneur Friday, we're focusing on a suburban-based company making innovations in emergency lighting.
As the weather warms, Chicago's rooftop bars and clubs are swinging into action.
Police captured the man accused of burglarizing a Wisconsin gun shop and mailing an anti-government manifesto to the White House.
WBBM Business, the markets are closed in observance of Good Friday.
And the AccuWeather forecast says we could have a high of 70 today, but mostly in the 50s near the lakefront, some rain possible later on, maybe even a thunderstorm. It's 59 degrees this hour.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. WBBM News Time, 12:31. U.S. markets are closed today because of Good Friday, so let's take a look at where stocks are and where they may be going. We're joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Mike, welcome back to the program. When the markets closed yesterday, they were down in the triple digits, at least the Dow was. And was that simply a reflection of traders wanting to get out of town early for the long weekend? Or was it also a reflection of some of the geopolitical instability? Because as the trading day entered its final hours, we learned about the mother of all bombs being dropped in Afghanistan, this on top of what's happening in Syria, and the saber rattling with North Korea.
Well, good afternoon, Rob and Chris. And I think that this sell-off is a little bit of a lot of factors, and what you mentioned are many of them. Certainly, with what's happening in the world right now, there's a little bit of unease here in America as to what is going to happen next. But I think what drives markets in general is always going to be economic. And right now, we're seeing, as we saw this morning, even though the market was closed, we had a CPI report and a retail sales report come out, and they both came out weak. So it looks like this sell-off could continue on Monday. The only thing I will say that might be a caveat to that would be that we have sold off pretty hard already. And in general, we sell off into tax day every year. So people have been getting their tax refunds late this year. That's part of what happened with retail sales being weak. So there's a lot of factors that could mean that maybe we're bottoming here. So Monday is going to be interesting. Monday is going to be interesting because we have the day off today, so we really don't know what the markets are going to do. The only thing open right now is currencies, and they're trading very light. So there's no real idea of what's going to happen. My guess is we open a little weak, and then we probably rally after that because, like I said, the markets have already kind of anticipated some of these numbers and have already sold off.
What sectors do you like?
I like airlines, and I almost am embarrassed to say that after what just happened with United Airlines. But I like airlines just because economically they're in a great position, and I like home builders. Home builders are kind of underloved right now, and they had a bad year last year, and I think those two sectors are going to perform well. If you can stomach some of these reports that come out with how United and some of these airlines have been treating their customers, which is a travesty, the actual economics of the industry are very good. And they've probably never been better. And you have investors like Warren Buffett getting into these industries. And I love airlines going forward. So those two would be my picks.
We saw the banks' earnings last week, the big banks. How do you feel about that sector?
The banks are going to be dependent on the yield curve, as they always are. And the yield curve is flattening, which is not good for banks. So that's why you've seen banks sell off recently. And here we go with CPI being weak and retail sales. So if bonds continue to rally, which means yields keep going lower, and that causes the yield curve to flatten, that will not be good for banks. But we may be at a point where we don't go much lower in yields. If that's the case, banks would be a buy. My feeling is we're near lows in yields, and that will probably start bouncing back up. So I would say banks would not be a bad place right now.
Well, thank you very much, Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading and author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago, with the snapshot of the economy on this Good Friday. Coming up in Entrepreneur Friday, we meet a partner in a suburban company helping people see the light when the power is out.
It is Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we focus on a suburban company that is using its founder's expertise in lighting and manufacturing to build a new business. And we welcome Perry Segretto, managing partner at Patino Lighting in Elmhurst. Perry, welcome to the Noon Business Hour.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
They say that an entrepreneur is someone who sees a need and fills that need. That seems to describe what you have done here. Tell us what you have invented.
Exactly. That's exactly what we did. We identified a problem in the market. In a residential space, there isn't an emergency light. So if your power goes out, you have no way to, you know, exit the building safely. So we've identified a problem where we want to provide light on the ground. So to do that, we replacing your normal outlet with an LED light. That gives you light on the ground where you need it, when you need it. And it goes on when power is interrupted or your smoke detector is triggered anywhere in the building. So in other words, it works in conjunction with a smoke detector and provides the same safety. So at Patino Lighting, we try to recognize new products all the time and to solve a need. And you can see a video on our website for patinolighting.com.
You are still in the process of this light. What do you need to do to get it on the market?
Well, it's at that point right now. We're finished up to that point. It's patented, designed, and full production. We are working with a marketing company right now to negotiate licensing deals and to be on retailer shelves.
And when you talk about the retailer shelves, I mean, who would this? I mean, this, you say this would be available to all homeowners, but is this simply a case of you walk into, let's say, a Home Depot or a Menards, and there it sits?
Yes, absolutely. It'll be right near the smoke detectors.
Because if I had to describe the product, because we do have a sample here at the radio station, and it's basically, it looks like an outlet or a light switch with what you would call, is it an LED light built in that, as you said, would come on when power is interrupted?
Correct. It's a high brightness LED that provides the requirement for emergency lighting on the pathway on the ground. So it complies with a UL 924, which is emergency power equipment, in the NFPA 101 life safety code. So it's not a night light. It's actually an emergency light for residential.
What else do you want to work on, Perry?
We're in the middle of developing some other stuff that we're still doing some research and development on, but mainly lighting.
The aha moment for you, was this simply a case of you got sick and tired of fumbling around looking for the flashlight when the lights went out?
Absolutely. The ones on the market now are usually, you know, you can take them out of the socket and walk around with them, but nobody ever replaces them. This is a permanent installation and stays in its place, so nobody can tamper with it. So, yes, to answer your question, yes, tired of trying to find my light or the batteries that go out on it. This has a circuit, internal circuit, that keeps it recharged at all times. Even when it drains, it ramps back up within a few hours for ready to go again.
And how did you get the support to be able to work on this? Did you have someone help fund you?
Well, no, I have two other partners, and between the experiences of us three, engineering, operations, and in-field contractor, we were able to do this with our network and our design team.
Well,
so
thanks.
It was all in-house.
Well, good luck to you, and look forward to seeing that in stores. And
best wishes, Perry.
Best wishes, and
absolutely.
And it's some thunderstorm in the not too distant future. If it knocks your power out, that'll keep the lights on for you. Perry Segretto, managing partner of Patino Lighting, based in Elmhurst. Still to come, rooftop bar season is just about here.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:51. Improving weather means preparations are underway for Chicago bars and restaurants that serve the outdoor crowd. That includes those providing a scenic rooftop setting. We're joined by Hannah Tyrell, director of the Roby Hotel, whose Cabana Club in Wicker Park opens on May 7th. Hannah, welcome to the program. Let's talk about the Chicago outdoor dining and drinking scene. Now that it seems like spring is here in earnest, no more of those false starts, the 70-degree day here or there. It seems like the 60s and 70s are pretty consistent in the AccuWeather forecast. So tell me how you guys are gearing up for spring, summer 2017.
Yes, well, we are excited to open Cabana Club. That will be the Roby's newest addition to all of our food and beverage venues. It'll be a seasonal cocktail bar with Mexican-inspired menu. It has a beautiful sweeping view of the Chicago skyline, lounge seating, a pool, and a restaurant. So we're very excited to open soon.
When you evaluate the competition in the rooftop dining scene, do you judge yourself by other rooftops, or do you also consider the bars and restaurants that are on the ground?
Well, I feel we have something very unique. You know, in the middle of this very urban neighborhood, it's a little bit of an escape. It feels, you know, like you're on vacation when you're at the Cabana Club.
Are there other rooftops in the Wicker Park area where you are?
There's not many. Taxum, a restaurant down the street, has a rooftop. And then, of course, Big Star, which they have a large patio, but very different than what the Cabana Club will offer.
Is this your biggest season, this the spring into summer season for the Cabana Club?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And the Roby Hotel has been there for how long?
We opened up at the beginning of December. We have Cafe Roby on our first floor, which is our main restaurant, a rooftop bar up and up, and then we'll be opening our third venue, which is Cabana Club.
It seems like the rooftop venues tend to follow each other around. I mean, for example, it's a no-brainer to have a rooftop bar downtown, or maybe in Lincoln Park or Lakeview or Wicker Park now, Bucktown, the near north side, the near northwest side locations. Maybe as you analyze the market, are rooftops moving out into the neighborhoods as well? I mean, do you see them propping up in Jefferson Park or Beverly?
Yes, definitely. I think that we're the first of many to come. You know, I think capitalizing on the neighborhood rooftop vibe is huge. And we're excited to get all the local people out on our rooftop.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Hannah. Best wishes for your summer. Hannah Tyrell is the director of the Roby Hotel, whose Cabana Club in Wicker Park will open May 7th. You will find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at cbschicago.com/audio and play.it.